Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Recording.
Day today.
Let's go.
Let's do this. Recording.
Hello everyone. It's Healthy Gut Girl, and this is Stuff Your Doctor Should Know, and I'm coming to you from deep inside your large intestine in Venice, California, in the BB King Studios with my partner in crime, Mark Lovato, who's in a very nasty mood today, just like our weather.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Just happens.
Happens when there's no sun.
There's sun out. I actually have to correct you on that. There is sun. It's just windy and rainy, which we never get. I think you just worked late. That's what I think.
The accumulation of working late for four nights in a row. I think that might be it.
That'll do it.
It just happens, man.
It happens. We're not, you know, we're human beings, and we have to go through these types of things, you know? I will say that this podcast is brought to you by healthiq.com/stuff.
As we segue from bad moods to healthiq.com/stuff.
I was actually just reading about every time we do a podcast, I'm reading about Health IQ, and it's crazy, actually. They've done so much work on their company. Like, I was reading this about all the different associations that support Health IQ, that you know, work with them. And it's the USA Weightlifting, Roadrunners Club of America, US Masters Swimming, USA Triathlon, Tennis Industry Association, American Trail Running Association, USA Racquetball. That's cool. That's really validating. But I was also thinking, well, what if I'm not, what if I have like a pre-existing condition? Like this Health IQ would never be for somebody who, yeah, they're trying to be healthy, but maybe they have like diabetes, but they're really trying to be athletic, or they're really working on their health, mm-hmm. when then they're excluded. But that's not true. That is not true. You can have a pre-existing condition, and you can still get low rates. You just have to take this fun test that we always talk about, which is cool. And then I was reading this crazy story about this woman who's a weightlifter. She's a member of the U.S. weightlifting since 2013. She said, I had been spending a lot of time on planes, and the thought occurred to me, if something happened to me, what happens to my child? I want to make sure that she has a good future. And the biggest takeaway for a gym owner, coach, or athlete that's active is you don't ever know what's going to happen to you. You could have a heart condition you don't know about. It's made me very aware of my mortality. I was on Instagram and came across the ad multiple times before I decided to click on it. And honestly, the process was one of the simplest things I've ever done. I mean, do you have life insurance?
I do not, no.
We do. And I'm glad for it, for sure. You know, you just don't think like that until it hits you, until it happens to you, right? And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, this, you know, person in my life is dead. It's intense, you
know? I think that's probably why I don't have life insurance. I'm a single guy.
Yeah, so. But you have a life that's worth something besides, you know, a friendship. And you're a son to somebody, you know, your brother to somebody, your friend to somebody. And, you know, if you passed, you could always... This is sad.
Yeah. Don't go, Mark.
Mark, don't
no,
go.
No, no.
But you could put me as your beneficiary.
I'm sure I could. And it makes sense. I've always thought about that. Like, you know, I always felt like if I had a family, I definitely would. Apparently, yes. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's essential. It's necessary.
But also, the people who you leave behind will have to take care of your life that you left behind. They have to take care of your belongings. They have to take care of your funeral. They have to take care of any hospital expenses. Mm. And how are they going to do that if you don't have anybody to bequeath your, you know, money to, your savings, your checking?
And they don't know my passwords to my accounts.
Yeah, so it's a daunting and depressing subject, but I think it's an important
subject.
It's probably
why it's not talked about a lot, especially with life insurance, because you don't want to think about the finality of your life. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, we live in a world where that can just You know, you want to live to a good ripe old age. That's my goal.
But even so, you're going to die eventually, and that's going to be, you know, someone in your life will have to deal with that. And it costs money to deal with
that. Yes, because love is like oxygen. Not enough and you're going to die. But
is that a poison song?
No, that's from Queen.
Oh, right. So, anyway, yeah.
I'm dying over here.
I poisoned him.
What? Did.
So did you sign up for Health IQ, Mark?
I'm in the process.
HealthIQ.com/stuff, ladies and gentlemen.
Was that a good ad for healthiq.com?
It is. Was that a good sponsorship? It is. People, I think this is a serious subject. We're not talking about coffee enemas here. We're talking about, you know, something that has to be dealt with. Absolutely.
Well, you've always said it best. No one's getting out alive.
No one. I think Bugs Bunny said it.
Is that right?
I don't know. Somebody funny said it. And it's true. You know, we're all going to. We're all going to kick it.
We're not getting out of here alive,
that's
all of us.
Intense. Like sometimes when I think about it, I get overwhelmed. Like when, since I was really young, I would have, like, you know this, I just have like these crazy existential moments where I was like, I'm going to die someday. I was like 10 years old and I'd go into a full-fledged panic attack thinking about infinity.
Yes.
Or like I'd look at the stars and I would think like, how many stars are there? Oh, they don't know. There's billions. What's billions? What's that? Like, what's outside of space? Like, what's outside of space? So you get to the edge, you get to the walls of space, and then what? Well, there's got to be another side of the wall, right? There's got to be another place to go. Where is that? I don't know. Oh, my God. Yeah, I would have full-blown panic attacks.
Oh, interesting. Like. I was funny. I was thinking about it yesterday while I was driving. I had this moment when I thought about when I got into the accident on my scooter.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah, and in the moment when, you know, I remember it well, I remember just you hitting the brakes, but everything just starts going in slow motion, and then I was out, blacked out, and just woke up in the middle of the road. And then just kind of reflecting on the pieces of that, the fragments of that incident.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started reflecting and go, oh, that's kind of how it happens when you have a moment, like when it's the final. That must be similar. Like say, okay, I'm going to go a little macabre here. So say you're on an airplane and it's going down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it happened. So I felt a little bit of a panic. So the body just shuts off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, I guess it protects you. So I guess when people maybe commit suicide and jump mm-hmm. off buildings, you know, it's so much that you just kind of go off. And I thought, well, I guess that's the protective mechanism. Or maybe it's just you're never – you know, we think of it in terms of this finality, like, oh, my God, it's going to be so bad when I pass or if I get into an accident or if something catastrophic happens. But I got to admit, for the times I've been into accidents, I've been hit by a car walking on the street. I don't remember it. It just happens and you black out. And I got to think that's kind of what happens when we kind of have that moment between here and there.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing happens. Well, in a way, that gives me a little bit of ease. I'm like, oh, I'm not going to be awake if, you know, I feel myself hit the ground, you know, from mm-hmm. a falling cliff or something.
Well, I don't know that that's ever been my concern anyway, is like the actual moment of impact or moment of...
That's the fear.
Well,
right?
I think it's the being in the fear of the plane falling out of the sky. Like that is more horrible than actually hitting the ground, because that's such an instantaneous split second. Unless, of course, you're half alive and have a, you know... the arm of your seat sticking through your spine and you're bleeding to death. That's different. And you're like aware of that.
Or you're sucking in large amounts of oxygen to keep you awake for the experience. I'm not sure if that's... No, don't give me the oxygen.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this is macabre. But I like to talk about this stuff sometimes, you know. But you made me think of something like, okay, why would the body do that? Like, we're all about survival, right? Our human selves are just like, our human bodies are like, okay, what's the next necessary thing I need to do to stay alive? Like, survival.
Mm-hmm.
So why then would we go into this slow motion, see your life before your eyes type of thing? And I thought maybe it's because it gives you moment to perhaps do something about it if you can. For example, if you were drowning, right? I heard this story. I can't remember where. It was a woman on a guest on a show who had like out of past life or not past life. What's it called? And
out of body experience.
No, near death NDEs, near death experiences, where she was stuck on in her canoe, what's it called, kayak, upside down in a river, in like, you know, category whatever, is like expert, and she's upside down, and she starts to realize, she gets that moment where her panic is kind of gone, and she realizes she's going to go unconscious any second, but it's a slow process. And I wonder if that is the body like, okay, we're going to slow you down, we're going to get rid of the panic and get rid of the chaos so that you can figure out what to do to get out of this situation. Like, it uses like extra hormones to bring down your cortisol, or to bring down,
takes you out of panic to give you a moment to assess and maybe get out of the
situation. Yeah, because like panic and fight or flight is meant to be the opposite. It's meant to save your life. It's supposed, like they always say,
which is reactionary.
Proverbial reactive.
Yeah.
Sorry. Which is the proverbial run from the saber-toothed tiger, correct, right? So, But if that saber-toothed tiger grabs your ankle and knocks you down, all of a sudden you're like, I'm gonna die. You're in slow motion, and then you have this, wait a minute, I'm in slow motion, I'm gonna die, maybe there's something I can do. I can punch him in the eyeball. Ooh, you punch him in the eyeball, he lets go, you get to run away, you're missing a foot, and you survive.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know, I just thought of it.
No, that's really interesting.
Because why would the body do that? Like, some people who are very spiritual or religious would say, well, that's God's way of relieving you from the suffering. Kind of like what Wade T. Lightheart said about the rabbit,
right,
screaming. He said, you know, he shot the rabbit, and he said he was hunting. He shot a rabbit, and the rabbit screamed. For those of you who didn't hear the podcast, and the rabbit screamed, and he was young, and the guy was young, and he said, "Why is the rabbit screaming? Who's the rabbit screaming to?" And he said he's screaming to God, like to relieve him of his suffering, which was an intense thing to think. But maybe that's, if you're from a spiritual perspective, maybe that's why the slow motion, it takes you out of that sheer panic and terror and pain, because you have this moment of just like peace almost.
It is. It's almost like you can take that choice to just give into it, or maybe gives you a moment, like you said, for your rational mind to come in again and figure a way out of it, if there is one. Either way, either way, from the experiences I've had, I've been hit by a car walking down the street, and I've, you know, had an accident on the scooter. And in both instances, it's been the same every time. It's been a slow motion. In both those situations, I couldn't have rationalized anything out of it, but there was just a calm. It wasn't, it was no longer a fight or flight.
So then you would say, well, what does it serve you as a human being in survival mode to not feel anything and just go into that state? How would that save your life? So then it, and I don't think it would, to go into that mode.
Yeah, I just think it just takes you out of the fear.
So why, right? Like, that means, that to me means there is a spiritual component to it.
I would tend to say yes.
But I'm sure a lot of science nerds would be like, no way.
I think
that's
that
because the metamorphic process of the brain synthesis.
Yeah, right. Well, I think any science, scientific theory can say why that happens, that this hormone starts to unleash, and that might be true. And then I'm sure there's some kind of scientific background that backs it up.
You can always look at everything from a science perspective,
yeah,
can't you?
But it's automatic. Yeah. So if it's already automatic within the body, sure, maybe there is a hormone that the spiritual element put within you that says, okay, this is the start of it. This is how I'm going to initiate this transition from one state of existence to another. And so I'm going to start it with the body. I'm going to release this. They're going to experience some kind of fear, panic, and then it's just going to be, oh,
right.
Oh my God, it's full of stars.
Oh my God.
It's full of stars. Anyone knows that from Stanley Kubrick. And that, I figured, and that's funny I bring that up, because it wasn't until last week I was thinking about that line. And that's when I went, oh, because I didn't understand it when I was younger when I heard that. I'm like, what does that mean? Oh, it was that transition from life to death.
Yeah.
And hit that, and his last words were, oh my God, it's full of stars.
It's so cool.
And it just hit me at that moment, like, now I think I understand it as an adult.
Mm-hmm. Because we are just stars.
Okay, I'll take that. Well, yeah, cosmologically, we are made of the stuff of stars. I had a friend of mine tell me.
Well, then what do you think he was saying?
No, now I do know that. What's...
Yeah, what was it?
Well, if you interpret...
that's what I meant, was like, we are heaven. We are stars. We go back to whence we came.
God, you know...
What did you see or hear? Perceive.
The perception is like, it's that... to me, it was that moment of rational thought of what heaven is, of what eternity is. And in that moment for that person, for that experience, went, oh my God, it's full of stars. That's what he thought. Well, maybe that's not what he thought it would be.
Mm.
That the idea of eternity was as simple as, oh wow, it's full of stars.
Mm-hmm.
But that just could be the going through the initial door. I don't know. But
well, you know, when I first saw Contact, you know how they start out in space and
yes.
all that, and they go through, and then you end up in Jodie Foster's eye. When that traveling through space was really, really profound for me, because I felt like it was... I also went to an IMAX once, an IMAX movie about like the Hubble or something. It was amazing. And I was crying through the whole thing, because I just, you know, I think that is some kind of, like, we do come from there. Like, that is a heaven of sorts. That is heaven. And that is, like, familiar to us. And we are that. Like, not in our human shells, but, you know, our souls or our spiritual self. Like, it goes and it joins into this greater consciousness that is light. And as you go in that direction, you're passing through space. And so in Contact, and I always thought that from a really young age. And so when I saw that in Contact and they captured in my mind's eye how I see dying and going to heaven, I was like, oh, that's it. That's the trip. That's the trip we take. Maybe we've taken it many times, but that's the trip we take. Anyway, that's cool. That's deep.
According to my friends, that's what she said. She said that we've kind of lived this life before.
What friend?
My friend Denise.
Oh, right.
When we've had these deep conversations.
Yeah.
It's like,
is that in terms of like meaning past lives as different people, or as in the string theory? Like we're living multiple lives at the same time.
I'm not sure if it follows the string theory. That
multiverse theory.
The multiverse theory. In terms of how she put it, it's like you're, she said that your life is kind of like a film, and you may have done this already. You've seen it play out before you manifested into this reality.
Mm-hmm.
And you come back to go, no, there's something about this I want to change again.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always exact. It's not always the same, that the outcome can change by just something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what, you know, she was trying to get across. Whether I subscribe to it, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I did subscribe to the fact that what I liked that she said regarding your soul coming into this physical manifestation feels the same fear of unconsciousness to get to this place as we do right now to that next place of consciousness.
Oh, that's cool. That's a cool concept.
Yeah, same fear.
Huh. So fear is,
because you have to
it.
Forget to come here a little bit.
That's interesting. Because, you know, reincarnation is refuted mostly, I would say, especially by the scientific community, obviously. But mostly, most people, I think, do not believe in reincarnation, right? I don't think Muslims do. And they're the largest population or religious population in the world, right? And then like Hindu, they do.
Yeah, their reincarnation believes that you may come back as an animal or something. That's why they don't kill any small creatures, because they might think it's a reincarnated uncle or something.
Mm.
But the Buddhists believe in the obvious reincarnation.
Right. So Buddhists, but then Christians don't, or at least most Christians don't. And anyway, my point is that I'm trying to arrive at is these people, like these young kids who they have. There was a show on, you know, I love this shit. It's called, of course, it just vanished from my mind. It was about children who have had past lives, or they claim to, the little kids who are now grown up, but some of them are grown up, but they would go through they would tell their story from when they were born about how they would have recollections of dying in airplanes, or, you know, one girl would have a nightmare really young, at like 3 years of age, would have a nightmare that she was being choked to death. And then, you know, as she got older, her mom was very open-minded, and after trying every sort of allopathic method of trying to help her, she finally went to a psychic or a, not a psychic, like a medium, like a healer, like someone who does channeling, that's what it was. And they were also putting her in a meditative state. And this little girl, who was at this time probably seven, she'd been suffering with this her whole life. She tells this story about being an actress, a young actress in Hollywood in the like 30s or something. And she ends up getting murdered and choked to death. And then they looked it up and they actually found this person. They actually found this person who she could have been and had that life. She could sing. She had like the most amazing voice at a really, really young age, like a voice that where you're like, wow, that child has been somewhere before here, because her talent was so amazing. And she picked up guitar or something like that really easily. There were so many episodes of this, not enough because I loved it, and I think it just didn't get picked back up because I was the only one watching it. But there was also the boy who everyone's heard about, the kid who was having nightmares at night. It starts with night terrors with these children where they are really, really young. He's in a fire. He feels like he's being burned alive in the middle of the night. He runs to his mom's bed. And this is happening every night, every night, every night. Like horrible, right, for this poor child. Finally, he gets to the age where he can talk and form sentences. And he's drawing pictures of himself burning in the cockpit of a plane. He becomes obsessed with airplanes, and he can identify World War II aircraft by looking at pictures without any names on them at all. He's like, that's a Spitfire, da 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 da. Like amazing, uncanny ability to identify these aircraft, and so obsessed with it. Anyway, he gets to an age where he's like, his parents can't do anything about it anymore. Also, they've had as much help as they could get allopathically or conventionally. They finally just start listening to him and look up who he claims to be. He's like, my name was this. I was in the World War II. I died in an airplane. It went into the sea. It was on fire before it got hit. It got hit in the sky. It was on fire in the cockpit. It crashed into the ocean and I drowned.
That's a recollection that didn't leave.
So get this story. So then they go searching for him online and stuff. They find the guy who he claims to be. They locate his friends whom he actually thought was naming. He meets these people. They go in a boat with these old men from World War II who were in their 80s and 90s. They get in a boat and they all together, they go off and they do like a burial ceremony type of thing where they throw flowers in the water off the coast of Hawaii somewhere, because they were kind of doing it as a ceremony to have some passing for him or some closure for him. He knew these men. He cried. He wept. He was so young when all this took place. I mean, you can, like, go ahead, debunk it, let me know, send me an email and tell me how they debunked that. There was another story.
You can't debunk that.
You could, I guess, but someone could. But there was another.
How does science debunk a spiritual? How is something, your science can't debunk something that's just unprovable?
Well, they do say, science would say it's not science, it's not repeatable, there's no evidence to show that this,
there,
that
well,
this
is... Well, that's the limit, you know, there are so many limitations to science, and because we're measuring, I read this once before, that the tools of analysis to come up with scientific theories and scientific proof are limited to the tools they're using.
And thank you. I just had this thought in the shower this morning.
Oh.
I know. I'll tell you why it's significant. I didn't mean to interrupt
you.
No,
it's okay.
Wow, that's crazy. That we're on totally on the same wave. We almost didn't do this podcast today because we were in such bad moods. But I'm glad we did. there, just remind me of that, because there was another boy, a young boy in India somewhere, who had this weird scarring birthmark on the back of his neck, on his skull, meeting his neckline. And he was having similar experiences as a young child. And because they believe in reincarnation there, his family was listening to him right off the bat. And he was saying, I was murdered by this man in this village. And they got in the car, whatever, the train, the camel, whatever it was. And they head over to that village to find this person. And not only did he identify the man, but he knew that the hatchet that was driven into his brain that killed him, he knew where it was buried, in the back of this, in the property of this person, and they dug it up and they found it.
Well, then that would kind of disprove his own theory that he was the victim, because if he was the victim of this guy who murdered him,
how would he know where the
hatchet is? Yeah, because he's already gone. So now you're talking, maybe this person might be a medium.
Right. Well, maybe he saw it. Maybe he was bleeding to death and he saw him bury the hatchet and he wasn't quite dead yet. You know what?
Well, now we're speculating.
No. I think I'm leaving out part of the story, which is that he actually was buried with the hatchet. I think they found the bones of the guy with the hatchet in the thing, I think. I'll look it up while we're talking about it.
Interesting. Okay, got it.
Yeah. Anyway, those aren't the only two stories. There are so many, or three or four stories. There are so many, hundreds and hundreds. And it's hard to, I'm sure a lot of them are BS, but, you know, hey.
So here's where you get to the part of distinguishing and acknowledging science. And using science for the benefit of your life, for humankind, and then having these internal, whether they're intuitive thoughts, whether they're powerful images that just recur, to know that for the person going through them, it may be true, and it flies in the face of science. And I guess to have the rational just kind of know-how that you have to kind of hold true to some things that just can't be proved. And that, I mean, anyone can say that in regard to religion. Well, you can't prove it, and that's why I believe it. Okay, I understand that, and that's where we can go too far. The point that I'm making is that sometimes, okay, we're having this conversation. If you truly believe and feel something, and it might be true, and science won't be able to prove it, it doesn't mean that you don't listen to other people. Sure, you can take it, but at the end of the day, you have to sit in that chair by yourself, go, no, I know. Mm-hmm. And I think the world, I bring this up because I think the world does, that's where it kind of gets a little hazy.
Because there's a lot of crazy people in the world.
There is a lot of crazy people, but I'm always about empowering people. Mm-hmm. And I've always said this growing up, that the world will do what it can to disassociate you from your truth. Mm-hmm. And that leaves you to being at the behest, or you're at the mercy of other people's knowledge, and we live in a world, well, he's a PhD, she's a PhD, he's a scientist. Well, what they say must be true, and I agree with that, mm-hmm. because you have to balance it out. I wouldn't want to be that guy that says, no, I don't believe anything. I know what's right, because you don't want to be arrogant about it. But what I'm saying is to have that fine line of staying in your power, and your power is truth, and you know certain truths that other people don't know.
You sound like Oprah.
Am I Oprah?
Well, her speech that I watched online was all about speaking your truth. You know, you bring up a lot of good points, and I was saying about in the shower this morning, I was thinking, because I listened to Joe Rogan's podcast yesterday and I got really upset and I lost some respect for him, because I really, as you know, really like Joe Rogan. I love his guests. I love what he's doing. I like his perspective. I like his, how rational he is, and he's a libertarian. There's just a lot of things about him that I like.
Agree.
But I lost respect for him because he had this guest on yesterday. Well, first, let me just say to you, that you're right. Some things we don't have the tools yet to measure. And this is what Dr. Marshall used to talk about in terms of, like, we don't fully understand the human body as an energetic being yet.
Mm.
We don't. We know it's there. We have ways of recording subtle energy, and we know that it's there. Traditional Chinese medicine understood it way better than we did, and that's the acupuncture, meridians. We know currents of energy flow through the body. We know we are energetic beings. We know that our crown chakra and that our pineal gland and our pituitary and our hypothalamus, we know that's the crown of the head, and that there's something about our energetic, our kundalini, people call it, that come up, that comes up from the sacrum, that comes up from our root chakra and travels up the spine like a snake up to the top of our head. We know that that's real. We know people can feel
and
that.
And people can see it. I've seen it.
People can feel it.
Yes.
It's something that isn't even an argument in other cultures. You know, in other cultures, it's just a given. It's a fact. It seems to be the Western culture is the one, are the ones that are having. Why? Because they can't measure it.
Well,
because
we're headstrong.
Sit down. Well, I just think that scientists in America are the worst kind. And not just Americans, but they're the worst kinds, because they have this attitude where they are like, science is everything, you know, and they don't budge. There's no room for anything. And that's not science, because real science sits back and observes and watches things change. Watches, oh, hey, you know, this... Don't get me started, because then it goes into
And you respect science. You use it. You read it. You understand it. You love it.
But I'm also an observer. I'm also open-minded. I also know there's things we don't understand, you know? So, you know, when people... Okay, so here's where it comes to the Joe Rogan thing. So I'm not even going to mention her name, because I think she's vile. But she... And of course, I'm biased, because she wrote an article about bashing chiropractic and talking about how chiropractic is founded on witchcraft. And I don't know, I'm using kind words. She went bananas and she attacked the entire field of chiropractic. And Joe Rogan jumped on board with her, and they just spewed vile vomit all over their podcast. I couldn't even listen to 15 minutes of it. I had to get off of it. I was so pissed. Yes, I'm biased. Yes, I'm married to a chiropractor. Yes, my life was changed by chiropractic.
Same here.
And so, you know...
But you've seen things other people have not, because of chiropractic.
I guess it was because she was saying things... You know, Joe Rogan, these words came out of his mouth. Chiropractors walk around telling people that they are doctors. Joe Rogan said that. That's a quote.
Maybe some do, unfortunately, and give it a bad name. It's possible, right?
I mean, let's talk about how many doctors give the field of doctors a bad name. Let's talk about how many medical doctors are quacks.
Right.
Let's talk about how, you know, the third leading cause of death is the misuse of pharmaceutical drugs.
Correct.
Let's talk about doctors being pill pushers in the U.S. and how drug addiction is largely in part by the overprescription of mm-hmm. opiates.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, No. Of course there's bad chiropractors. There's bad everything. And there's good everything. And there's a reason, Joe Rogan, there's a reason that the medical industry recognizes a doctor of chiropractic, a doctorate. He is allowed to call himself a doctor because he is a doctor of chiropractic. He actually has to put something like 1,000 hours of supervised, you know, on-hands training. He was saying they don't do residency. No, they need 1,000 hours or more now, I think, especially in California, of supervised clinical training.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie has 8 years of schooling and a student loan to prove it. Like, you know, it just made me crazy. So I was listening, and then Charlie came home from jiu-jitsu, and I was like, I hate Joe Rogan now. And he's like, what? I had to open a bottle of wine in my dry January. It made me so angry. I was just like, you know why? Because people listen to him. Lots of people. He is the number one downloaded podcast in the world. And there are people out there who could benefit greatly from chiropractic. And he just completely shat on the entire profession, on everybody. He was actually mad, because he said that Dee Dee Palmer, the founder of chiropractic, had a foundation of energetic healing, of magnetic healing. He practiced magnetic healing in the 1800s and 1890s, something like that. And he was crazy. He was crazy. You know, how many geniuses are crazy? How many genius people were bananas? And he was into spiritualism, and which was really popular around that time. And, you know, let's go down this rabbit hole. So at the time, the medical industry or the medical field, medical practice, let's say, in America was very different than what it is now. There was a lot of holistic practitioners. There was a lot of homeopathy, a lot of natural remedies. People used herbs. They used effectively as well. A lot of people suffered, but a lot of people, you know, they also didn't have certain vaccinations then. They didn't have, there was a lot that hadn't grown yet. It was an immature field here in America, so to speak. And then Rockefeller came in, the wealthy mogul came in, and he basically owned most of America already, including all the oil industries. And they discovered that the oil industries, this petrochemical component of the oil industry, they could make things, they could make chemicals from petrol, they could make pharmaceutical drugs. And they realized that this was something they could patent. They couldn't patent holistic remedies. They couldn't patent herbs and, you know, herbs and homeopathic remedies.
Or plants.
They couldn't do it. So he's like, hey, look at this. So he, and I think it was Dale Carnegie maybe, or I can't, don't quote me on that, but got together, put their money together, and they started to fund the colleges and turn, and that's how pharmacopoeia in colleges got started. Now, I'm not saying that's horrible. I think it's wonderful. I think there's a lot of greatness that came from that. And my life was saved because of pharmacopoeia, because of medicines. But it was a way to take over the industry. So not only did they do that, they could have just started their own field and do that, do the pharmacopoeia with the colleges and do that. But no, they also had to blackball people who were using natural remedies.
Right.
They had to try to shut down all of that, including chiropractic, homeopathy. They demonized them. They even jailed doctors for practicing natural remedies.
Yeah, study the history on this.
Yeah. So this is what we're looking at here. And this is around the time that D.D. Palmer created, he actually didn't create it, I think. He actually just brought it forth from the Greek history.
Was D.D. Palmer, was this the story where he met a man who had hearing loss?
Yes.
And he kind of went to his back.
Cracked his neck.
He had a protruding bone, and he, once he put that bone back in place, the man's hearing restored.
Yes, exactly.
So
now this vile creature that Joe Rogan had on, and here's why she's vile. I don't have a problem with people who disagree
with it.
I don't have a problem with it. In fact, I bought a book by a woman whose name I can't remember called Crooked, and it was about how to get out of back pain naturally and how to avoid shysters. And she was bad mouthing everyone from physical therapy to chiropractor to medicine to pill pushing doctors. And all of it, she was saying, this is how you do it. And she was a journalist. She wasn't even a doctor. She said, this is how I did it. This is how you can do it. And it was strengthening your core, and it was doing these particular exercises, and it was brilliant. And she didn't have very good things to say about chiropractic, but I bought the book, and Charlie and I both read the book, and he said, I agree with a lot of what she says. That's fine. I'm okay with that. It's this ridiculous high horse attitude.
On the bandwagon that this is the way it is, and there's no other
point of
view.
But also basically throwing shade, if you will, on a profession that has been around since the 1800s.
And proved itself.
So then Joe was saying there's no science to prove chiropractic. I mean, you could do case studies on Charlie's career all on its own.
Well,
treating a treating a particular vertebrae in the neck or a bulging disc or whatever, the same way over and over and over and over with the same exact problem presenting itself in 10 different patients over the last 20 years with Charlie, and I guarantee you,
seeing the same result.
The same result.
And you said you were seeing it with little children who had these problems over at the Premier Center.
And that's that, not Premier, that was the Napa Center. And also here at this new place in his new office, you know, and I mean, since I met Charlie, this is one of the things I fell in love with so much was when I started to see his work with these children. And, oh, man, I hope Joe Rogan listens to this. And, you know, in his defense, I didn't listen to the whole thing. Maybe they cleaned up their act towards the end and started to have a little bit of respect for the chiropractors who are doctors, who do serve the world, who do serve people, who spend their entire lives and have, like I said, you know, student loans to prove it, and a doctorate in that field, and specialize in how to help people, not just out of pain. So these children, they said it's effective just for back pain sometimes, but you'd be better served to take a couple Advil and see a physical therapist. Is basically, that's also what the fake doctor says on Sanjay Gupta or whatever his name is. Anyway, so when I met Charlie, he was working with children with disabilities, and there was parents who would literally bring their child to see Charlie once a week just because their child with cerebral palsy couldn't have a bowel movement. And Charlie would say to them, it's because, you know, in this spastic position that he has no choice but to be in because of his condition, it's impinging on his vagus nerve. And that vagus nerve runs up into the brain. It serves the enteric nervous system, which you and I have talked about. It's your second brain. It serves the stomach. It serves the groin. It brings all this blood flow. It helps the cerebral spinal fluid flow in the body. It's this central, it's next to the central nervous system. It works in conjunction with the spine. If you have an impingement in the body from a vertebral subluxation, like you have a vertebrae out, or you've got something going on where you've got a spinal stenosis or scoliosis, and these children had this kind of thing because of their conditions, impinging on the vagus nerve, he would go in and adjust them and literally in the room, in their diaper, have a bowel movement like clockwork every week, multiple children all the time. They would change their attitude. They would have some of them who weren't having the constipation issue, but having other issues, like they would go from visit to visit with him and have slowly degrade with their speech or their hearing or their pain threshold and their ability to eat, their crying, their acid reflux, all these things. And then they'd see Charlie, and then they would do tremendous after that for a while, and then it would come back, because of course these children were in these conditions constantly, in these situations where they were either paralyzed or, and so I was blown away, and those are severe. There was also, behavioral disorders where children that had severe behavioral disorders, he would work on them and how it was calming to them. It would completely calm their nervous system because it affects their the spine. They're like, it's just the spine. When they were talking about it, like, it's just the spine. All they can do is help you with back pain. Go see a physical therapist. Physical therapists are great, especially if you've been injured. But when you don't know, when you have autoimmune conditions and you've got constipation and you've got eczema and you've got bulging discs and you name it, chiropractic is tremendous for that. I could go on for a while. One of my experiences was when, I had that accident in Mexico where I basically broke my orbital bone in my face and I fractured my nose. This was years and years ago, 25 years ago, probably maybe more. And it was an emotional experience because I had been drinking. I didn't know what happened. It was a ridiculous, debaucherous night for me, and it was horrible. And it was very traumatic, physically and emotionally. And for a long time, I went thinking that I had been mugged, because the people I was with, we didn't realize what had taken place. So I thought that I had been mugged and beaten. And when I saw this, I had to go see this plastic surgeon at Cedars. They said, yeah, you were definitely kicked in the face, or you were hit with a blunt object. Somebody, definitely attacked you. Like, they were certain. The doctor was certain. So I just assumed that I had been. And so nothing was taken. My wallet wasn't gone. My money, my ID, my camera, nothing was gone. So I didn't know. So I had this horrible feeling like I had been, attacked. So Charlie started working on me when I met him. This is years later. He starts to do this interoral cranial work where you've had it done. It's amazing. He puts on a glove, usually grape flavored, and he goes up into the mouth with his fingers and he resets, I don't know, I want to say the It's not facets. It's like the plates of the skull, but on the roof of your mouth. He resets the jaw, but not in an aggressive way, right? And he stretches out the I don't even know the words of any of it.
But he's in your mouth and he's readjusting. He's putting pressure on the bones at certain points.
Which is a form of chiropractic. And then he adjusts your neck, but not in the way that most chiros do. He does that sort of like unwinding technique where he readjusts the neck or adjusts the neck. And then after a lot of this, weeks, maybe months of this, one day he's working on me. And I have my eyes closed. Very painful for me because he would get up into that area where they had to put like a little stent to keep the bone from collapsing there on my orbital bone. He would go up there with his finger and he would stretch the skin and do like kind of like therapy on it, like scar therapy. And I would just, tears would just come down my eyes. It was so painful. It was so uncomfortable. And one day I had this vision. Like it just came into my head that I didn't get beaten. That we were all running, we were all being silly, ridiculous, and that everyone described jumping over this wall, and that then they couldn't find me, and then they found me a little while later. Well, that I had hit the wall that they jumped over. And unfortunately, I don't remember anything, but when he's working on me, I have this vivid, vivid recollection of looking down at my tennis shoes, running really fast and laughing hysterically, and then lights out.
Wow.
And I knew then in that moment that I hit the wall.
God, I have heard that your body records, it's not just in your brain, your memory. It's in the cells of your body.
100%. It was that work that he did. And I had, it was so therapeutic for me to have that memory. And, you know, after that,
I do?
It was way before that. Let me tell you, he had some other gifts.
Whatever you want, I'm in. You got it.
No.
Life.
He won me over way before that with many other gifts.
Who would have thought it was a finger in the mouth? Usually it's other places.
Let me tell you. Oh, gosh, I'm blushing now. Well, you know, that does bring up another story about chiropractic. Yay, chiropractic is all
yes,
I have to
right.
say. And yay for people like Charlie, you know, who are... you know, who use chiropractic and body work and other forms of energy work and palpation and different things that he does that are tremendous, you know, that are so healing. And I just want to just be like, man, Joe, oh, you're so mean. You were so mean. He was so vile.
You know,
about
Joe,
it.
All Joe has to do is just talk to a lot of his MMA fighters.
That's what he said. He said he got a lot of backlash
yes.
from it. And that he got like a dozen or more emails from people who were really upset. And,
yeah, I think Conor McGregor keeps a on-site chiropractic and massage therapist on the payroll.
So let's go back to what we were saying about Dee Dee Palmer, the creator of chiropractic. His son was his biggest student and, I don't know, guinea pig, if you want to say. And his son was the one who kind of took chiropractic and developed it more into what it is.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, he was probably crazy too. Who isn't crazy who develops these tremendous, you know, methods?
Crazy is in the eye of the beholder.
Healing. So, needless to say, it is respected and acknowledged by the medical profession, regardless if, you know, someone's walking around going, yeah, but you didn't go to pharmacopoeia or you didn't do your residency. It's still a doctorate.
This witch hunt already occurred with chiropractic in the medical community a long time ago.
Yeah, that's what.
And they overcame this.
Right. That's why they be right. They were.
So this lady is on. She's on the McCarthy era.
Yeah.
Kind of witch hunt again.
Right.
To demonize it. I don't know the person you're speaking of and I haven't done any research. I'll have to look at some of her, you know, her bio. What's her deal? Where is she getting this from? What is her bias?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe she just taking the contrarian point of view and running with it, and that's how she markets herself.
Well, I think that the American medical paradigm has always had it out for anything that they couldn't patent and sell for a lot of money.
Well, that's their market share.
Right. And I think it's also, you know, there was a book that Charlie used to talk about a lot called Are You a Target for Elimination? I think is what it's called. Every chiropractor will know what I'm talking about. Which is basically like, you know, this sort of witch hunt to go out for people who, you know, they claim aren't science-based. Do you want to use my
phone? No, it's okay.
So anyway, so I was going to talk about the finger. So another experience, this is before Charlie. And I had been to a lot of chiropractors, and I had okay results, for sure. I'm not going to lie. I felt better, and I had different reasons for going at the time. And we won't get into that now, because I think we've talked about it ad nauseum in the past. But anyway, one of the things that happened to me was I broke my tailbone. Lucky me. And really badly. Like twice I broke it. And the second time it fractured. It was like a bad break. Like the tailbone was completely turned up towards my rectum. Like it was so broken. And I was in so much pain. And I was seeing this guy at the time who was like, he had a chiropractor who he loved. And he said, you know, my chiropractor specializes, even though he hasn't done it to me, he specializes in working on broken tailbones. He works with people who with bull riders. That's like his specialty. And maybe you should go see him. He was all the way in Lakewood. So I went, and the treatment was that he had to bring his secretary into the office because a woman had to be present.
Where this is going.
Put on a rubber glove, stick his finger in my butt, all the way to be able to grab onto the tailbone from that. Yeah,
I'm cringing as you're telling me this.
Yeah, and like,
and lift you up like a hook.
Lift me up like a bowling ball.
Yeah, right.
And he would have to do it multiple times. Like,
holy freak.
Like that. And the first few times, I mean, I wanted to scream, you know. First of all, who wants a finger in their ass? Not me. But, and especially someone who you don't know, some random guy you just met stick his finger right in your butt. And it was really painful. But that...
But he gave me really good Chianti beforehand.
Really good Chianti. And he gave me a discount.
We have to make light of this, folks.
Yeah. So... anyway, I was able to drive home that day from Lakewood all the way here, which was probably 40-minute, maybe not that long, maybe like 35-minute drive, without having to, I'd have to lift one butt cheek up and lift the other butt cheek up, like keep resting my tail, like not. I couldn't sit directly on both butt cheeks. I had to lift one cheek up and lift.
So this was a chiro, right? This was a chiropractor.
This is a chiropractor. I wish I could remember his name, because I would certainly give him props.
So I would say to this person who was on JR's podcast, how would any kind of medical prescription modality help that situation? Where would you do? What would you do if you didn't
they
have
give
a bone
specialist? Oxycontin.
Yeah, right. A palliative, some kind of a Band-Aid over the situation that doesn't actually take care of the cause.
But it's science.
And here's the thing: isn't this what Chiro is the first thing? And I've heard a chiropractor say this when they were being demonized by the medical industry. They're saying that they are not we're not here to cure anything for you. That's pretty. I'm going to take this from what I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. This is like you do this first before everything else. Mm-hmm. Like before you go spend this amount of money, go to a chiropractor. It doesn't cost that much, and it's not invasive. And you go there first, and then if all else fails, then go your other way. Go the other route that would you think is going to give you relief.
Well, there's certainly different types of chiropractic. Lots of different modalities,
right?
Lots of different.
And the way people work on. Look, Charlie's unique.
Philosophies. Yeah, he is unique.
Because I've been to chiropractors where I've gone in the office and it's, okay, you're there 5 minutes, 1, 2, 3, okay, go, and go in for adjustment, come out. And I kind of always felt like, I felt like it was a cheap date. I didn't get much out of it. And maybe I have.
Rubber glove and a finger.
No rubber glove and finger, which I probably would have welcomed. And look, Charlie is unique. There's no doubt about it. The way he works on you, he gives you you certainly feel taken care of because you're in there for a period of time, and he's giving you this healing session for at least 20 minutes. And I think that in combination with the adjustment and the muscle work,
and the decompression table, and just his whole philosophy.
Yes.
But you know, The issue about
Dr. Charles Martin, Venice, California, Santa Monica, California.
Dedicated wellness.
Dedicated wellness goes in.
I'm speaking on behalf of all chiropractors, in defense of all chiropractors, even ones that are doing buy the lifetime package. You know, come in here, buy the lifetime package. You and your family. You know, you want your family to be healthy and out of pain too, don't you? Even those guys, because just like all medical doctors should have. Their opportunity to speak their truth. You know, this they went to school to learn how to do this. And something that, like going back to what you just said, which is, and for them to go off and practice the way they want is their right to do so, right?
Right.
As long as they're not harming anyone, and, you know, which means, in my opinion, financial harm as well as physical harm and emotional harm. So, you know, when you go... most of the good chiropractors that I know believe that, like you said, before you go off and you start spending money or you go to get some drugs or a surgery, the body has a healing mechanism. It's got its own ability to heal itself. And sometimes it needs to be activated because of how much stress you're under, because it's shut down because you're under so much stress that it's not able to rest and digest. It's in a fight or flight. And that has a lot to do with the vagus nerve. It has a lot to do with your C1, with your atlas bone, with the first vertebrae that's up at the top of your neck that your cranium sits on. Your whole entire nervous system is held up by bones, by vertebrae, you know, by discs. These matter. Do you think they don't have an effect on... She said that couldn't have happened. It was a misdiagnosis. The guy who got healed with the hearing, the Dee Dee Palmer's... The story you
this
told
is 1930s. A little bit. How does she know this?
Yeah, she said, how could... First of all, how did he give consent if he's deaf? How did he give consent if he's deaf?
That's your argument?
That's what she said. She said, second of all... there are no nerves that go from the spine to the ears, so you couldn't have done.
Is she right about that? No nerves? Okay, wait. Aren't there nerves throughout your spine that go all the way to your head?
So.
I mean, I went to the Body Works Museum, right. And you see these red nerves going through the spine into the skull, and this is.
She's completely vile. So here's something that is
we should
amazing.
Tweet. Let's start tweeting Joe Rogan now.
You're wrong. That's all I need is for Joe Rogan to get on my case, and then his entire fan base attacks me, yeah. And then I'll have to get off of Twitter. So anyway, but listen to this. I have something that Charlie is. Oh my God! I'm so filled with concepts and ideas and experiences when it comes to this subject. One is that, you know, a lot of people have come to Charlie with Bell's palsy.
Is that right?
Yeah, a lot. Definitely, probably almost a dozen.
And for anyone, what Robin Williams died of, right? Essentially, he was diagnosed with Bell's palsy.
No, that.
They found that afterwards. That's what he had.
Die from Bell's palsy. It's just like
He didn't die from it, but he had it and didn't know how to deal with it. And because he was misdiagnosed as thinking it was an early set of Alzheimer's.
Oh.
His Wolfgang, what's his name? His really good friend, the comedian Bobcat, said it on him. He's like, yeah, he wound up having it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like a paralysis of the nerves that usually goes to the face and the eyes and one side of the face usually. I've seen it a lot in different people, and he's had a lot of clients who have been, and there's some recent research coming out that's showing that it could be viral triggered as well. Like people that have Epstein-Barr or have suffered from different types of viruses, that it can be triggered by a viral component. And I think that the couple of people he wasn't able to help in that regard, I think that might have been the case.
Okay.
But the people who he's helped that have had it, it's tremendous. It's amazing. They had written testimonials and everything just after a few sessions where it's completely... And the reason is because all these nerves that run up into the face, that run up into the spine, the vagus nerve, all these big nerves, little nerves, all these different, you know, nerve endings can be impinged by vertebrae, by a misaligned vertebrae, by a subluxation, by a bulging disc, by a herniation. You know, these things are real. And another example, incredible example. So the woman who owns the Napa Center, she has a son who is has cerebral palsy. He's an adult now. He's in a wheelchair, and he's basically needs full-time care. But he drowned or had a near drowning when he was an infant. I think he was like one. And he drowned. They saved him. They revived him. And he had cerebral palsy because of it. He had some brain damage. And which is a really common thing, he got torticollis from it, right? He was still functioning. He was able to crawl, and he was able to do certain, he was mobile. He was agile. I mean, he could move his hands and stuff. But he had torticollis. And torticollis is when you have, I'm doing this physically, but
how would you describe it?
Ear to your shoulder, and it's like you're stuck
contorted.
That way. And babies get it a lot. Because their presentation when they're born could affect, you know, the way their vertebrae, yes, their vertebrae in their neck could be torqued a little bit and cause muscular tightness and spasms, and keeps the baby in that position. And then they get into the car seat, into the crib, and they stay that way. And so, you know, it can be worked out. But anyway, he had torticollis really bad after his drowning, near drowning, and he ended up having a surgery. He went in for a surgery for torticollis. I think they tried Botox in his neck, and that's what they do for a lot of these babies, is they'll give them Botox to relax the muscles so the torticollis will go away. He goes and he has surgery. In the surgery, they sever his spinal cord. And now he's a paraplegic.
Oh, man.
At a very young age. Do you know how many people, how many infants I have seen with my own eyes? It makes me want to cry. And watch Charlie help that child heal from torticollis with just chiropractic. In fact, oh my God, I'm having this memory right now. And I'm not making this up. This is 100% true. One of our early clients when we opened Dedicated Wellness, the boy had, I forget, it was an acronym, disorder. It was like a APCNO or something. This comes kind of disorder in the body, which caused him to have hearing loss and a little bit of malformation in the face. And he had hearing aids and torticollis, severe torticollis. And he was probably two. And his mom came in. I forget how she heard about Charlie. She came in regular care, maybe a couple times a week. Torticollis went away, and she was able to remove one of the hearing aids from the side that he had the torticollis.
See, I could see why you get emotional about this when you have all of these experiences and know-how and seen chiropractic transform these people when other cases have gone to the medical industry to solve this problem, and yet your husband took care of it in a few sessions. And you hear this lady on Joe Rogan go off. It's witchcraft.
It's bullshit.
And you want to say
they're crazy. They're bananas.
Yeah, let's make this an explicit podcast, and I won't. But you want to just say, you know, four letter expletives, and say you don't know what you're talking about. You have not seen what I've seen. You have not seen the transformations, nor experienced it from the people that I've come in contact with. So when someone comes across and says this stuff, people just run. Just know. Just it's not true. There are other experiences. There are other.
I've
been going to Charlie for years, and I've tremendous, just amazing results.
Yeah. I mean, I just in my own life, you know, and I don't know. So he came home and I told him about it. I was like, I hate him now. I said, I don't hate him. I just lost respect for him because he was vile about it. He wasn't kind in any way about it. It's like I said, you know, you can say, look, I just don't agree with that. You know, like when people say to me that their doctors put them on, you know, synthetic horse urine estrogen, you know, I'm not like, you stupid. Where did you get your doctorate or your PhD? What's the matter with you? What are you, charlatan? You know,
you don't solve anything.
He's doing the best that he knows how to do. That doctor is doing what he knows how to do, and he's probably helped a lot of people. But in my personal opinion, I disagree with giving people horse pee for a hormone replacement, and that's just me. But I'm not going to sit here and spew vile stuff about an entire
disinformation
industry.
About a whole industry without knowing that there are truly look, if it was witchcraft, if this was all witchcraft and this was all a baseless, useless science, folks, chiropractic would have been gone years ago, decades ago, but it's still around. Why? Because they have a great marketing guru that just keeps pushing it, and even though it doesn't work, snake oil gets revealed as snake oil in time.
Right.
And if this was true snake oil, well, it wouldn't be working. It's not. That's not the case. Chiropractic is chiropractic to this right. day because it works, and people find relief from it.
You know, so I still get to the best part, which was that Charlie came home from jiu-jitsu.
Oh, okay.
And he walks through the door, and I was like, I'm so mad. I was drinking some wine. I'm like, I'm so mad. I told him a little bit about it, and I said, isn't that crazy? And he goes, what do you think about that? Like, he wasn't really saying much because he's in the vortex. I say when he comes home from jiu-jitsu, he's vortexed. It's like he's a vacuum. He's so devoid of energy from rolling hard that he's like a vortex. It's like... And so I said, what do you think about that? And he goes, I don't think about that. He's like, I ain't got time for that. I got people to help.
Yeah, there you go. People come to him. Right.
He's like, what am I supposed to do? Oh, my goodness. Fight some that? Woman I don't even know, some freaking podcast guy is supposed to all of a sudden like tell me that what I'm doing doesn't work and I'm a charlatan. Uh-oh, I better quit my job and find something else to do since it's all fake.
Right.
So anyway, I was on it. I was on one, and I was thinking about the energetic component of it all and how what you said. And this morning in the shower, I was thinking about it. I was thinking, you know, we just don't have the tools to measure some things yet. We don't have advanced enough equipment to measure some things yet. And that goes for the energetic meridians in the body and, you know, the work that Dr. Marshall was doing before he passed and people continue to do, which is the quantum reflex analogy and energetic medicine and magnetic healing, stuff like that. It's difficult for the means of science that we have to measure those things and quantify it now. Because I think that when it comes to subtle energies, we don't have the technology yet to truly understand and measure it. Just like, you know,
unless you're using the human body. I mean, how are we going to – you kind of – I want to say this. I want to say that you got to – that's why you have people who use the human body, because this is a tool, and we know that. We discount this – again, this is where we start – the society starts disempowering human beings, that you yourself are a tool. You yourself can measure things. You yourself have a point of view. You yourself have truth. And when you have a conglomerate of people that come together and go, I know this works. I feel it. You're going to discount that? Yes, it hasn't been done in the university.
Well, it's a placebo.
I hate this. And you got to be careful, because when I want to use science for an argument, it's there. And so this is a fine line to know that you can't always prove things. I can't always prove things that I feel like I know. But I know my body is a tool. I know my body has subtle nuances that can pick up things that far exceed my rational thinking. And I go,
well, I think the placebo argument, when you're using it from, when a scientist is using it from their perspective, like this woman did, from her perspective, she's saying, you know, most of the time that people get better from chiropractic, it's placebo effect. And it's like, that right there just completely refutes her argument. Because you're saying that the mind healed that person.
Well, then she just said the same thing about the medical industry, that the only reason why anyone who's taking a pill or healing, or excuse me, you don't heal or getting results, is because of the placebo effect.
Well, they can prove that an aspirin works. They can prove that an OxyContin works the way it does biochemically. Like, that's proven. But, you know, to give somebody a pill and it's a sugar pill and you say this is for your headache and their headache goes away, that they're using that, like, debunking energy and debunking things like chiropractic and debunking energetic medicine. How can you do that when you just told me it's a placebo, meaning my mind is what healed me? My mind just made my headache go away. The power of my own mind just did it. So you just completely... you debunked your own argument. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just supported the concept that energetic healing is real because I just used my own brain to heal myself because I thought I could.
Right.
It's so funny. It's like, it's a double-edged sword, it is, you know, because I think someday we will be able to, just like, you know, 100 years ago or 50 years ago, 25 years ago, we weren't able to measure or take pictures of energy, like around food, like Kirlian, how do you say that word?
Yeah, Kirlian photography.
We didn't have that technology. No one would ever say that a lemon has energy or a field or a biofield or an energetic field. A scientist would laugh in your face, especially one like her. She would spew vile vomit in your face and laugh at you and say that's witchcraft. And now we actually have photography that you can take a picture that shows the different energetic field, the biofield of a lemon that's just freshly picked from a tree and a lemon that's dying, that's been sitting on the counter in the sun for 2 weeks, and take pictures of the two, and the actual energetic pulse or field that it gives off can be measured.
Right.
And there's a university in San Diego that studies, I forget the, it might be the University of San Diego.
Right.
That studies subtle energies.
Yes.
They measure frequency. This is real, you know? And 50 years ago, someone like her would have laughed at you. She would have never been open-minded enough to say science can change, because science can change. Science does change. And to sit there and have this, you know, not be an observer.
Yeah, the subtle energy. We talked about it with Wade Lightheart when we talked about superlocality, how cells and distances,
right,
when you do it in one area, affect it into another area. And we have proof
that's
that
proven,
works.
Yeah.
That's proven. Is that placebo?
Right.
It may be. And then I know people, I met people, you know, you live out in Southern California, you meet people who have this auric sense, a visual feel, they can see it. And I've always asked, well, how do you see someone's aura? It's like, well, just kind of look at them, but have a loose gaze, and you can see this little auric field.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it happened, because I remember going to see Dr. Beckwith over at Agape one time.
Oh, Reverend Beckwith.
Reverend Beckwith. By the way, we're in the garage and it's raining outside, so you're going to get a little background noise. I'm hearing it. So I went to one of his sermons, and he was just the term I want to say is on fire, because he was
Reverend Beckwith.
He was on fire. He was just talking about something that was really profound, and he was in the groove. You could see he was passionate, and it was affecting me too, and it felt great. On fire. Why do we say that term? Because it's an energy, and we feel it. And I had a loose gaze, and I saw out of the top of his head a crown of light, just like going in like a siphon, you know, just kind of going from
like a spotlight.
Well, no, it was like it centered on his forehead and went out.
Yeah, like a big flash.
Yeah, like a big flash, and it was in his forehead, and I was like, wow, I could see his crown chakra. Did I question it? No. Did I feel something? Yes. Was it obvious? It was.
Yeah.
Can I prove it?
No.
But I would stand by it. I wouldn't let anyone tell me otherwise what I saw.
Right. And as far as I know, you're not crazy. But yeah, I mean, I can think of a lot of different examples, and it could be a, you know, play on light with your eyes. It could be the, you know, when I go to church and, you know, I've been to like kirtan, sessions, you know, where they play like the instrument, the, you know, the kirtan music, and they sing for like an hour, you know, and you're just singing the same. It's like, it's almost like Hare Krishna style, like where you just so Hare Hare Hare, you sing the Hare Krishna for like 40 minutes, you know. And Kundalini, where you do the same kind of thing over and over and over and over, and you do this like like breath of fire, and you keep doing that. Or in church, when we do the worship session where you're singing for, you know, 15 minutes, and the music just crescendos, and all of a sudden, you want to talk about the Holy Spirit. Everybody feels the energy.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone,
mm-hmm.
You could bring tears to your eyes. Same thing, you know, you go to a concert and you listen to an opera singer and you're just like moved. And it's because that sound, it's a frequency, it's vibrational, it uplifts you. The same way, you know, the rain today and the gloominess and no sun, there's a vibration, there's this low-level energy. It's energy. And it affects you, and it affects your outlook. So there you are in church with Reverend Beckwith, or I'm at my church, or we go to a kirtan session, or we go to Kundalini, and you raise your vibration. You literally, measurably raise your vibration.
You know, there's something that doesn't get talked about much, and that is the effectiveness of sound vibration, that there is a power in that. What I'm trying to get to is, and you'll have to forgive my train of thought on this one, maybe follow it. Remember watching these older films from the 50s, you know, the sci-fi films, and whenever you heard a spacecraft, woo, woo. Mm-hmm. Okay. So take that with
style flying saucer.
Right, right. Sound vibration. And there's theories that say, you know, the pyramids in Egypt and these huge rock sculptures in Florida.
Monolithic,
these huge rocks and they're in these.
Coral castle.
You know, thousands of pounds of rock and they're sitting on a swinging door and no one knows how they got there. Well, the theory is, excuse me, that it was all raised by intense sound vibrations, that the harmonics lifted so high creates an energy field, and this energy field can lift heavy objects. And, you know, some people have heard that with having UFO experiences, it kind of helped. They heard this loud hum noise, mm-hmm. and maybe that they believe that might be part of how anti-gravity machine works by using, you know, high-level harmonics where your ear can't catch it, but pick up on it. But it can move things.
Make things anti-gravity.
And so then you come back to these anecdotal stories of when you get together and you're singing and chanting, yes, transference of energy. There's science that shows that people who kind of get together and talk and have a good time, and that feeds and you're feeding off each other. It's not just perceptual. And that's only part of it. But there is a transference of energy. Richard Bach talked about it in his book Illusions. You know, mm-hmm. it's just like you can't see it there, but there's a mingling of people's energies. And then you have Paul Stamets. I'm going to keep going on this. Mm-hmm. Paul Stamets talking about this on a molecular fungi level, that when he comes in contact with Joe Rogan, his fungus, his microbiome, is affecting his microbiome.
Yeah, they've just inoculated each
other. They've just inoculated each other. Okay, so you have physical, you have harmonics, you have a visual spectrum, lights. Okay, so how do we prove all this? Mm-hmm. But we know it exists.
Right.
And we go, and you say, as a rational person or anyone listening goes, I've had these experiences. You're right. There's some kind of a truth there. Mm-hmm. But then you have someone that says, well, you don't know because maybe a placebo. You just might be convincing yourself. Yeah, well, you know, I'm not going to allow my truth to be dissuaded so easily by that.
Well, I also, once again, and I deal with this a lot on my Facebook groups on Facebook. I really go out of my way to maintain a cohesive, nice, kind, safe, I hate using that word safe, but place that people aren't going to be judged for their choices and whatnot. And you see collectively, you know, there's 7,700 members now, and you see the energy. You see if one person gets into a little argument, you see the rest of the day, everyone is bickering.
Feeds off
throughout.
And gets in it, right.
Yeah, whether they read it or not, whether they read that comment or not, I feel like it's like, okay, I'm gonna go there now. By the way, that was beautiful and well said, I was right with you. Back to the microbiome with, you know, the quorum sensing, mm-hmm. and the ability for the bacteria that are in your colon to talk to the bacteria that are in your mouth. That cohesively, I keep saying that word cohesive, but like as a whole part, all these microorganisms can speak to one another and affect one another, mm-hmm. regardless of their location. Just like we talked about with Wade T. Lightheart and, you know, the Secret Life of Cells, that book, where you can separate the blood of a human from its human, right. from its host, and measure it and have a reaction in the blood. And have the blood sample react to certain technology when the human has a reaction in another location entirely, right. or their saliva or whatever. And if you guys are not following me on this or Mark on this, listen to the Wade T. Lightheart podcast because we go into depth about that. But basically, the microbiome is incredible that way. And that's just our physical body. So if I can come in contact with you and my microbiome inoculates your microbiome, and now you and I share some of the same microbiome, and then, you know, Dita, our little dog, is here, and she's got a microbiome, and now we're all part of that microbiome, and my neighbors are close enough that I see them sometimes. So bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and all of a sudden, it's the whole planet. It's the whole planet that somehow is connected in this
Vibrational frequency,
but also in a microorganism kind of way too, where you can affect.
Well, maybe it's the frequency that affects the organisms. I mean, if it's like if it's a wave, and it's almost like a radio wave. It's like, okay, it waves, and then the organism picks it up and feeds off it, kind of like the mob mentality, like you said. I mean, there are studies that show that the reason why when you have these, say, riots, and they all kind of act as one organism, mm-hmm. And they've proved this, that your rational thinking goes out because you're feeding off the, you know, it does sound...
Energy.
You're feeding off the energy, and you follow each other, and that's just because we are an organism, and we're affected by these mm-hmm. and instructed by it.
That's why I really, really feel like we need to turn off our TVs and try to limit our social media. And because I feel like that, you know, it's like, you know, you see how everybody gets caught up in the political climate. Everyone's fighting, you know, everybody's one-upping each other and going at it, sword fighting with words and, you know, slinging mud. And it's just like, if I get on there and I start to read some of that, I definitely go down that road, and I'm like, "Whoa, wait a second! I just spent three hours being so upset."
You were blinded by it.
Yeah, and you know, let's go back to Wi-Fi with my the podcast Radiation Nation with the man who wrote Radiation Nation, and talking about, you know, we didn't realize until very recently how much our physical bodies are affected by Wi-Fi, by the waves of by microwave waves, by Wi-Fi waves. By all, like if you could put on a pair of glasses that allowed you to see energy only, you wouldn't want to take one step in front of you because there would be waves and particles and light coming from every direction, and you would feel like you couldn't move because it's in the city because there's so much of that. Did you happen to see this post that I posted on Tomatoes and Kittens the other day? I posted it on my regular Facebook. It was these pillars of light, colorful pillars of light that they compared to the Aurora Borealis. I thought it was a joke. I saw it and it just looked like some kind of light show where it was multiple. Oh man, here comes the trash truck right through the alley. Anyway, so there's these pillars of light that look like rainbow lights that are shooting up from the ground, and they're very, very linear and very organized. They're not random. They looked extremely... like they were meant, that they're done on purpose. I'll just start that whole part over.
Want to come in for a drink?
This guy right next to us has like 7 trash bins. Now I'm not getting any Wi-Fi.
Yeah, we can't close the door.
Oh, is that what it is? Well, no, we had the door closed last time. It must be the rain.
Rain doesn't conduct. It gets too much moisture in the air. Dryness conducts better.
So that's something we just had to pause. You won't get any of that. He's going to edit that out because the trash truck just drove by. But that's something, you know, it's raining outside. We've worked in here a few times and our Wi-Fi has been great, and all of a sudden it's not great. And you just made a comment about too much moisture in the air maybe affecting the frequency,
the conductivity,
affecting the wave, the conductivity, the Wi-Fi. Who knows? Like, you know, we don't know enough yet. We don't know enough. You and I don't know enough, but also science doesn't know enough yet. You know, and if they do, they're hiding it from people they're afraid to the reality of it is that it's killing people.
Oh, that's a whole other issue.
Other podcast.
Yeah, no, really, the waves that come out of your phone, you're putting it to your head, people have getting tumors because of it.
Right.
But that stuff doesn't come out.
Well, I was going to say before the trash truck that...
pillars of light?
Yeah, these beautiful, beautiful pillars. It's on my Facebook if anybody wants to go to my Facebook, Kitty Martone. And I think it's the last post that I posted. And it's... and there apparently this has been going on forever. Why is this on here? apparently it's nothing new. Let me see, I'm getting to it. It's anyway, it's nothing new. It's pillars of light that look like tubes of rainbow colored light shooting up in places like, you know, northern Montana and Iceland and Alaska, a lot like the Aurora Borealis, but not in those waves like that. I mean, this is, talk about the Matrix.
What, someone's taking a picture of this?
There's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of
Who's taking, what are you, here. Are you using special equipment? What, tell me about.
No, no.
So this.
Pillars of light.
I'd look it up. A Wi-Fi.
What would I say? Aurora. Just aurora around the world, seen around the world. Let's see. Images. There they are. Check this out. I'm showing him on my laptop just the images. It's unbelievable. Just look it up. Look up pillars of light around the world. And I've never heard of it. I mean, we've all heard of the Aurora Borealis, and it's been explained kind of to me.
I have to check that out.
But it's unbelievable. It's beautiful, and it looks fake. And I just don't understand. I've never seen it before. And I'm like, wait a second. How is this even real? Mysterious rays all around the world. Something really weird is going on in the Earth's atmosphere, whether it comes to aliens or changes in the Earth. I mean, I don't think it's fake, but it's really, really, really pretty. Anyway, it looks like we're wrapping up here.
I was just thinking.
What were you thinking about?
I was thinking that, you know, you bring up the pillars of light, and we're talking about subtle energies, and we don't have the science behind it, but we are. It's almost as if our awareness is riding this horse, which is our physical body, and sometimes that horse feels and directs us to things that we don't even know why, because we believe that we're sentient, we believe we're conscious, but on some subtle level there are forces at work that are affecting, you know. Just like I wake up this morning, just not, I mean, I had a great dream, and then the day gets started and I'm just feeling off. I'm not feeling it. Maybe that is just my thoughts, and you know, this is a varied subject, and we can certainly go down the rabbit hole with this one. But I am truly convinced that we don't know that all of this stuff is affecting us, and that it is. And you know, when you get together with friends and you feel that energy and that joy, that is something to really kind of hold on to. And that's something that I believe to be true in our lives as effective, that affect us. If I'm not making any sense at this point.
Yeah, you're definitely I'm rambling a little bit. Thoughts. Anyway, I don't know if it says a light pillar is an atmospheric optical phenomenon, which is an interaction of light with ice crystals. When the temperature drops, these crystals position themselves horizontally. As they fall through the air, they act like vessels for light, shooting it upwards. Bored Panda has collected more images of these gorgeous light pillars, so scroll down to enjoy. And it's like over Alaska. I mean, I'm having a hard time believing that this is real, and how come this is only just happening now? It honestly is shockingly gorgeous and very eerie. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why haven't we heard about this? This is like beautiful. That's a phenomenon that happens on this planet. And I'm 48 and I just hear about this. Come on. Anyway, so all I want to say is go chiropractors. Go chiropractors. And anybody who that's all I want to say is go chiropractors.
And I want to say, listen to yourself. You have a truth within you, and you know it. You know it's true. That's from Almost Famous.
Anyway,
I have to go to the bathroom. I think we should cut it out.
Okay. Well, everyone, this podcast is brought to you by healthiq.com/stuff. And we are doing such a great job with people signing up for Premier Research Labs accounts, getting their own accounts. Everyone is so happy with them because you can get the product straight from Premier. You don't have to go through, well, I would be considered your practitioner because they are nutraceuticals. So they're the highest quality possibly that you can get your hands on and reasonably priced, especially if you're getting them straight from the company. You get whatever discounts they're having. You get, you know, you get price discounts if you buy in a case, like a case of hydrochloric acid or a case of pink salt or a case of their Canadian honey that I absolutely love. Their coffee is amazing for coffee enemas. They have the enema bucket. They have the castor oil, the castor packs. They've got everything that I love, even the infrared heating pad, which I'm in love with my infrared heating pad, although Dita's using it right now. I put it underneath her little carrier to keep her warm at night. Super cute. She can have it for all I care. She can have everything. And the colostrum, I'm giving her colostrum. So I buy the colostrum powder and I mix it with a little bit of water and pour it on her food. So good for you, me, and your dog. A little pricey, that one, I will say. But anyway, so if you want to get a Premier Research Labs account, just go to healthyguckgirl.com and go to my shop page. And on there, you will see the Premier Research Labs banner. Click on that and it'll show you how to sign up for an account for free. It's free. There's no gimmicks here. There's no tricks. You just sign up for an account. If you want to order, you go through with ordering. If you don't, you don't. You don't give me any information. You fill out the form, but you don't put your order in with me. I don't know what you're ordering. I don't have your credit card, none of that. You go straight through the company. And that's great. And what else? We have another sponsor coming up soon, a product that I'm crazy about that is unbelievable that I'll tell you all about. It's a probiotic. I'm Healthy Gut Girl.
I started taking it myself.
I'm Healthy Gut Girl, and I've never truly recommended a probiotic ever. That's because the science shows that most probiotics don't make it past the stomach acid. So I finally found one that does.
And we'll get more into that.
Yeah, we're going to get into it. So thanks, everybody. Check out it. You qualify for lower rates with healthiq.com/stuff. We love you. Yay!